Welcome to Bits About Books, the home for conversations with authors of breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. I am your host, Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where our mission is to make buying easy. Our guest today is Ulhas Kamat, and we speak with him about his new book, How to Minimize Business Failure, Handbook for Micro and Small Business Mentoring. This fascinating book is focused on perhaps two of the most critical factors for a new business, survive and thrive.
Now, how do you measure the success of an entrepreneur? One is individual success, which is what kind of profit did he achieve? What kind of return on investment did he achieve? The other way to look at it is the survival of the business. How many businesses started and how many have survived over a period of time? As you're probably aware that in the micro and small business world, and that's where we are focused on, about 50% of the businesses fail after 5 years.
Ulhas is an accomplished business leader who has successfully discharged the P&L responsibility of a variety of businesses and has been instrumental in turning loss-making units into profit-generating entities. His extensive international work has included staff and line responsibilities in both developed and developing countries. His professional engagement includes Fortune 500 companies like ICI, Unilever, IBM, Tata, and Unisys in India for 2 decades. The following 20 years, he was associated with a global holding company that owns and operates autonomous units worldwide. He held total P&L responsibility for various business units in different countries. Geographically, this covered the USA, East Africa, West Africa, and Southeast Asia. Ulhas, after 4 decades in the private sector, transitioned to the social sector to use his skills, knowledge, and experience for the benefit of the underserved communities. Till his return to India, he was the Director of Program Services at the Washington, D.C. Minority Business Development Center, a funded project of the U.S. government. He served as a member of the Committee of Courses on Entrepreneurship of CBSE, which is Central Board of Secondary Education, India. Ulhas holds his BTech in Mechanical Engineering from IIT Bombay and has undergone specialized training in small business mentoring at Tuck School of Business, University of Dartmouth, USA. Now, on to this insightful episode with Ulhas Kamat. Ulhas ji, welcome to Bits About Books. I'm very happy that we could make this time and we are talking today. And this is a book I know of for a while now. And I'm really glad that we are in a position to talk about it.
Thank you, Subhanjan. And thank you for giving me an opportunity to explain about the book, what really prompted me to do this, and how I think it will benefit certain section of society.
Let's start at the very beginning. Why did you think you needed to write this book?
We have been involved, we meaning my organization, iCreate, has been involved in grassroots level entrepreneurship. Now, entrepreneurship is a complex subject. There are different aspects to it, starting with motivating people to become entrepreneur to actually becoming one. Now, when I surveyed the scene as to what is available for the grassroots level to become an entrepreneur, I found there are a lot of stuff written about motivating the people, what are the advantages of becoming an entrepreneur, but not something that explains how to go about it. Actually, I was reminded of the situation, what happened in the animal world. See, the mouse is mortally afraid of the cat. Hmm. So a few of the mouses got together and said, what shall we do? Why should we be afraid of the cat? So someone among them said, you know, in our animal kingdom, there is a wise guy called Owl. Why don't we go to him and seek his guidance to how to overcome this problem? So a few of these mouses trotted around to the owl who was sitting on a perch, and they said, hey, Lord Owl, we have a problem. we are mortally scared of these cats. These cats try to kill us anytime. What should we do? So the wise man, the wise owl said, the only way you can beat this is you also become a cat. So all of them said, wow, what a great idea. So started going back. After a few steps, one of them said, hey, wait a minute. They told us to become cat, but he didn't tell us how. So they went back to the owl again. So when they went back to the owl and said, hey, owl, you told us to become cat, but you didn't tell us how to go about it. So they said, listen, that is not my job. I'm only an advisor. I'm not your mentor. So you figure out how to become a cat. So the same situation applies to a lot of people at the grassroots level as to how they become an entrepreneur and a successful one at that. I mean, anybody can become an entrepreneur because I have an idea. But what we're talking about is becoming successful.
Right.
Now, I didn't find any literature, any detailed processes people were talking to the entrepreneur for somebody to become an entrepreneur. So we thought this is a felt need. We need to fulfill it. But we just didn't want to do some theory. There are enough theories floating around. So what we wanted to do is actually put our practical experience into a codified form. See, iCreate has been in this business for the last 25 years. Over the years, we have developed a lot of tools, techniques, methodology, etc. to help successful entrepreneurs. Now, how do you measure a success of an entrepreneur? One is individual success, which is what kind of profit did he achieve? What kind of return on investment did he achieve? The other way to look at it is the survival of the business. How many businesses started and how many have survived over a period of time?
Right.
As you're probably aware that in the micro and small business world, and that's where we are focused on, about 50% of the businesses fail after 5 years. In other words, mortality rate is 50%, survival is 50%. Now, that's a waste of a lot of resources. Now, obviously, you can't make it zero because there may be many reasons why the businesses fail. And we can talk about it separately. But in our situation, where people have been trained by us with our methodology, with our content, our tools, etc., you'd be surprised to note that after 5 years, the survival rate is 80%. That means there is a 60% jump in the survival rate. From 50, you add another 30%, which is 60% of 50.
Correct.
You get to 80%. Or 60% drop in the mortality. Now, if you have this, we should be able to share it with people who can use our methods, our methodology, tools, etc. So that was the other purpose with which this book has been written.
Right. What was the actual trigger in the sense that I understand the background.
Yeah.
And when you decided, okay, this is the time to write it, was it sort of coinciding with your 25th anniversary? Was that a mental deadline for you? How was the timing decided?
Well, timing was not decided by any particular event. It so happened the book got completed just about the time. Right. And the writing has been over a period of time. I think last 2 to 3 years, I've been, because I'm not spending my time only writing the book. There are other things that we do. So I would snatch time in between, complete a chapter, send it to my colleagues for review. So that process went on.
Okay.
And as we... The new things came up because when we started, thought of the idea, there was no GST. Okay. But when we were actually implementing this, writing this book, the GST was a main part and a lot of people had a lot of confusion about it.
Right.
So we tried to add a chapter on GST. So it just went on and there was no any particular trigger. Nobody had, okay. I mean, I didn't have to write the book to meet a publisher's deadline.
Right.
Self-published. And we thought we'll do a good job. get input from various people, which we did.
Yes.
So it just happens that, yes, 2-3 months before the 25th year, we also felt it is almost 95%. Now, I also believe, I mean, I could have even further improved it by taking 2 more years. But as they say, perfection is the enemy of good. I wanted to do some good right now by publishing this book. So, yes, there are some changes that we would like to make, which we'll probably do it in the second edition of the book.
Sure. Before we move on to the actual content of the book, what was your writing process like? When you said that you had to snatch time in between other activities, so did you set aside that every weekend I'm going to write a chapter, or how was that?
No, I don't think I had any very specific timeline. As I said, if you put artificial limitations, and then you compromise on quality, which I didn't want to do. So I would have written it, I would have rewritten it, reread it, given to my colleagues, asking for that. Because ultimately, it is not what I say, it is what the reader understands.
True.
So that's why I gave it to our team, comprising of our facilitators, directors, and everybody, asked for their input, what else can be done. Then I went outside of our own staff, talked to some of my friends and other people, you know, who have actually reviewed the book. I sent them the manuscript for their comments and review, which you have seen the comments.
Yes.
And when the comments came, I was said, okay, this looks to be good to go right now, because otherwise the slight improvement that I want to make, it always takes the asymptotic curve. And right. It'll never reach the parallel thing. So
yes.
That's how we did this.
Right. And final question is, how did you structure the book? Obviously, there was an organic method to this. It was not something which was set in stone. It's not that you had written down, okay, this will be the chapters. This is how the flow, the content will flow. So how did that structuring come about?
That structuring came about because of our Mool Mantra. See, we have coined a mantra called I Hope, which is an acronym for 5 stages of converting an idea into a marketable, viable business. Now, briefly, I stands for idea generation. And for any business to start, that is the first thing. Though a lot of people, I mean, there is a myth going around, the first thing that you need for starting a business is money. And we had to break that myth, saying that no, money comes if you have a good idea, but idea is the first thing. So spend time and details on idea generation. Again, we had to break some myths, like, you know, ideas you can always ask people. There are people who give you ideas on the website, 15 great ideas that you can make money from home. All kinds of things are available.
But true.
Idea should be something that you are able to generate yourself. And to generate that idea, we say, what is a business ultimately? What is an enterprise? It is a problem-solving exercise. There are problems in the community. There are problems for people. And you find a solution that solves that problem. And thus, you satisfy the need of quite a number of people who are willing to pay for the solution that you are providing. So, first of all, you should be able to find a problem that you want to solve. And we are lucky in India. There are enough number of problems that one can attempt to solve. Now, once you identify a problem, you should know how to go about solving it. So, what do you do for solving a problem? You try to see what are your skills, what is your domain knowledge, what kind of a solution you will provide that the customer values the service you are giving. And he or she is willing to part with money, because the giving away of the money is less painful than the problem.
Correct.
So this way we help the participants or the entrepreneur, aspiring entrepreneurs, to generate an idea. And in our workshops and all, we always say that idea should be your own. It should not be given by somebody. Then it is not your idea. You are trying to implement somebody else's idea. A lot of people come and tell us when we're mentoring, oh, my brother-in-law has started this business, he's doing great. I will also do the same business. But they don't look at what are the qualities the brother-in-law has, what is that I have, and what is the area that I'm. Is there a problem in the area that I live that this can be a solution? So that's why the first chapter on the whole process was the idea generation.
Right.
Now, once you have an idea, you don't jump to implementing it. Hopefully not. Though there are some people who do it and then they regret it. So the next thing we tell the people is find out more and more about this business. That is what we call as homework.
Right.
So the H in the I hope mantra stands for homework. So where you try to find out about the market size, who are the typical customers in the sense, because not everybody has the same problem. Only few people have a particular type of problems. So you are trying to address them. So what is the population of your target customer? Who else provides a solution? Not exactly as your solution, because competition is not defined by what exactly somebody else do to what, but which problem they solve.
Correct.
The problem may be transportation. So it could be an auto rickshaw, it could be a taxi, it could be a bus, or it could be a train. So there are alternatives to solve a problem, but you need to compete with those people because each one will also provide the same solution at a different cost. And each one will have their own value system to judge which one they want. So all this research that we ask them to, the competition research, the market research, research about the inputs needed, the processes, the government laws, the entire gamut, we put it together as homework. This is basically data collection. Now, also a little bit of a projection, because once you know what is the market size, what is the competition doing, you should be able to figure out how much of that market you can get, at what price, etc. These are your projections. Pricing is a projection. Your market size is a projection. But this projection should be based on the reality rather than your figment of imagination. Just to meet an end objective of profitability, you can't be changing your projections to make it look good. So all of this together is the data collection point. Now, what do you do with the data? Just because you say that there are only two competitors, will you be successful? You don't know. So you need to put all this data into some kind of a hopping mill to get some output. This is what we call as the opportunity recognition. The O in the I hope, stands for opportunity recognition. So what exactly does it do? It takes all the data that are collected,
right,
and does the logical calculations. In fact, we have developed a tool for this. We call it as Vajrastra, which is the business plan tool. The mentor has to spend a lot of quality time to ensure that the data that is captured is accurate, realistic, and the projections that are made are practical and not, as you call it, as a Sheikh Chilli's story. So once these numbers are available, we don't want the mentors to spend a lot of time in doing the computation because arithmetic is a lot of people's weak point. And also, the logic required for type of business changes. Because in the manufacturing industry, the inventory management, the cash flow, etc., are more prominent. Whereas in agroforestry business, animal husbandry business, the mortality of the crop, the growth period, gestation period. So all of these had to be built into a model, which we have done. So our Vajrasa tool takes all this into consideration. In fact, the moment you start with an idea, it tries to classify as to which of the 8 categories of the business plan or the business model, type of business, it falls into. We're talking about manufacturing, trading. Trading also can be a single product taping or the multi-product. It can be service industry. It can be agroforestry. There again, you either sell the produce or you grow and sell the items. Or same way with the animal husbandry.
Right.
So we have these eight different types of business types that we cater to in our tool. And the tool takes away the drudgery from the computations, which most people hate. So once the tool is used to convert the data into output, that is, you get your financial statements, it talks about income statements, cash flow, balance sheet, and all other related information. The other interesting thing about this tool is, obviously, you're not sure whether the tool gives you go ahead in terms of looks profitable or otherwise. Now, if it doesn't look profitable based on the realistic assumption, it allows you to change the model. In fact, a lot of people confuse between idea and a model. Mm-hmm. There may be a same business idea. For example, a restaurant or food service. But there could be different models for it. The model defines in terms of how do you produce or how do you provide the service, how do you collect the money, how do you do the distribution, and all of these play a role in the ultimate results that you get. So it gives you an opportunity to revisit your model and correct it to make sure you see the end result. You can play out with different scenarios. Even when it says the business is viable and profitable, you may want to change some the model, factors and see what it means. Mm-hmm. So it enables you to evaluate different alternate scenarios and then choose the one which you think is the best. And once this tool gives you the green signal, then you actually prepare a plan. Plan, I mean, you've gone through the whole process. Plan is only a document.
Right.
Planning is the most important part, and that is the from idea to opportunity identification. You have done the planning. Now you convert it into a piece of paper because there are people to whom you need to show this. So our tool also does that. You don't have to start rewriting anything. Once you accepted that this is the model that I want to go with, the computer or the tool will generate a business plan which will have the narrative, which will have the various financial statements, and which you can take to the bank, so to speak.
Right, right. So basically, the structure of the book revolved around the I hope mantra.
Yes.
And with the necessary context setting of why it is and so on. Right. And that sort of gave you the flow of the...
Absolutely right.
Of the content. Absolutely. Let us dive into the book. And my fundamental question to you is, why businesses fail?
There are lots of theories. Hmm. But the one that I would subscribe to is, first of all, you did not do your homework when you started the business. Hmm. Okay, let me go back for a minute. In the I Hope mantra, that I break it into three parts. I stands by itself, H-O-P, which is the middle portion, and then the E. E standing for execution. And if I were to give weightage to these in terms of their importance in a business successfully running, say suppose I give I 1 point, H-O-P, that means your homework, opportunity identification, and preparing a plan document, would be 10. E would be 100. So I would say 1, 10, 100, or geometric proportion for the execution. Because you may have a great idea. You thought of a beautiful service, if it is in the service business. But the person who actually does the service provision is not handling it properly. Will your customer come back? So when does a business fail? A business fails when the number of paying customers and the price at which they are willing to take your service or your product is not sufficient to cover your costs. It's very simple. It is a basic arithmetic. Your sales revenue, which is the product of number of units you are selling and the unit price, should be greater than all the costs that you are incurring, whichever way you call it, variable cost, fixed cost, etc., etc. And that doesn't happen.
Right.
That means right. You're not getting enough customers willing to pay the price you are asking for. So your business fails. The other thing, so this is the customer. The other thing is, a business may be profitable in the sense, when you look at the unit economics, suppose your cost of production is 100, including everything, 100 rupees per unit, and you're selling it at 120. So you have a 20 rupee gross margin. So at a unit level, you are profitable. But two things could happen. One is you don't have enough volume. That means you're not breaking even. Even if you break even, there is another interesting thing. You don't have cash. Businesses fail when they don't have cash. And why is it that you don't have cash? Because your model is such, you're giving it on credit. You are spending a lot of money on keeping high inventory. So your so-called profits are tied up in inventory and debts. And the debt can also become bad debt.
Correct.
Apart from, of course, any extravagant spending that you do, which is happening in the startup world these days, but that's not the topic of our discussion.
True.
So cash flow and the customer. So I talked about if you don't have customers, enough number of them who are willing to pay the price you're asking for, then you're not even profitable. You're not even breaking even. And even if you're profitable and you're not handling your costs or the cash properly, you end up failing. In fact, I put it in the book very, very clearly. Success has two C's. First is customer. Second is cash. If you are not able to manage either the customer, when I say manage, keep him satisfied so he keeps coming back.
Correct.
It could be he's also willing to pay the price, but your quality is deteriorating. So all these factors that go together to keep your customer satisfied and your cash flow managed. So success has two C's. So if you're not managing these two C's, you'll end up in failure.
Yeah, and I would like to add to this that what I have also seen when I'm talking to entrepreneurs is that it's not only managing the two, but managing the two in tandem. It's not that you're managing C of the customer, but not managing C of the cash flow. You really need to manage both.
Absolutely, because you may make the customer very happy, give him a long credit, but you don't have the cash. So you have to keep them in sync.
It's time for a short break. Stay with us. After the break.
When people look at successful businesses, what they see is only the glamorous part of it. They don't know how much of hard work they have put in. And nobody talks about it because then it looks like, oh, you're crying. How much hard work people have to put to succeed is not understood by people who are told, look at him. Look at this successful man. You should also become like him.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. CAST.IN. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for Bits About Books and founder of PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. Let's dive right back into the episode where we left it. So one of the things that I always felt, you have a quote from Guy Kawasaki in the book, and I happened to meet him many years back in San Francisco. If you look at the books that Guy writes and the book that you have written, and there is no comparison. He has not written a book on entrepreneurship or success of business or any of it. Your book is extremely dense in information.
Devil is in the detail.
Exactly. And entrepreneurs by nature, most of them, generalization is always a problem. But what I've seen is they do not like to get into the detail. So when you say execution is 100, I completely agree with you, because it's very nice to romanticize the idea, right? This is this great idea. We'll do this or that, whatever. But
I can quote, I'm sure you have read this, Kawasaki's, Guy Kawasaki. No, some other Japanese guy. You say, road to hell is paved with great ideas.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I totally agree. And yes, I have heard that in the past. So what is coming out is that you have actually hit the nail on the head by creating this tool, that the drudgery of what you think is drudgery can be taken away if you come and just input the data that you have collected, and then this tool can actually churn out either a go ahead or potentially ask that, okay, this is one area that you don't have enough data, you need to go and look at more data, and so on and so forth. In the startup world, people can spend enormous amount of time building a product without talking to the customer.
Yeah.
And that's a standard problem.
Yeah.
People have an idea, they start building, right? They don't go out, they don't step out. They put it off because they want to believe it'll work. It's like, you're romantically attracted to someone, but you don't want to go and say anything, because if you're rejected, then that whole fun is over.
Right. In fact, I'm right now personally mentoring someone, and I don't want to go into the details of that.
Sure.
So he has already built a prototype. But I don't know if he has talked to any of the potential customers. In fact, I called him for a discussion just to go over that. But right. The other thing is, as you rightly say, and those also, yeah, see, they talk to people who are like them.
Yeah. Yes.
Talk to their friends. And this is typical in India. I don't know whether the people don't want to offend somebody.
True.
You say, yeah, great idea. बाद में उसके पीछे बात करेंगे. ये क्या है इसको? क्यों ये मगजमारी करता है?
True.
So you have to go to, and in fact, as they say, it is always better to have an intelligent enemy than a foolish friend.
Of course.
So you go and ask your foolish friends, they'll all agree with you. हाँ में हाँ मिलाना है.
True.
आजकल पॉलिटिक्स में वही हो रहा है, but we're not talking about politics.
That's another business, shall we say.
And I'm not writing any book on that one.
True. Yeah. In fact, there's a very interesting book I read, and it's very well referred. Maybe you are aware of it. It's called The Mom Test.
Mom,
as in mother. So basically, you go and tell your mother, Mom, I have this great idea. Mom is going to say, yeah, it's a great thing.
You know? As I said, the relatives, friends and relatives who don't want to hurt your feelings.
Yeah.
करना चाहता है करने दो उसको, rather than putting it on the acid test.
My question to you is, why is execution so difficult? In the sense, where actually people fail when they go to execute? So imagine that the first four steps has been done, idea has been found, genuinely somebody has done a good homework, they have identified the opportunity, they have used your tool, taken out a plan. Now When it comes to execution, where do you see are the biggest bottlenecks, which will even contribute to that 20%? Of course, everything, as you said, is not in your control. Market may change, new technologies may come. There are things which are beyond control. But while people are executing, what do you see are the biggest challenges they face?
The problem is the following, two or three issues that I can talk. One is when people look at successful businesses, what they see is only the glamorous part of it.
Correct.
They don't know how much of hard work they have put in. And nobody talks about it because then it looks like, oh, you're crying. Right?
Right.
How much hard work people have to put to succeed is not understood by people who are told, look at him. Look at the successful man. You should also become like him. But right. Nobody is telling how you have to go about it. And that's why I'm saying in my this thing that execution is the most important. Because you have to be, you did not be only one day you produce quality and the other day second, okay, my averages work out okay. You have to be consistent every day. And there are new challenges coming. There are heartaches that you will get. But you cannot be saying that, oh, I don't want to do hard work. And the other thing that is happening, see, who's the one who wants to remain in business for a long time? The ones who provide value for the customer. And I'm not talking about the micro and the small business world, but otherwise in this debate that has already started on this thing, do the founders, do they think in terms of value for the customer or valuation for them? The focus is shifted from value to valuation, which is why they somehow manage to keep the thing going by pouring in more money, though you're not creating value, but you'll create a valuation and then get out of the business. So the people who want to start and get out of the business are really not the one who will work hard. So working hard to run your business successfully, keep providing value to your customer is most important. Moment your focus shifts from value to the customer to valuation in the stock market or the venture capital market, you lost the game.
Actually, sir, you have a huge amount of international experience and you have run large enterprises. And there also the same malaise is there, right? Because it's stakeholder value. It is shareholder value that people are trying to maximize, right?
Right. See, it is the next quarter is what I want to worry about, not the next century.
Yes. Yes.
This is what I always used to call is next quarter. I mean, you've seen the kind of scandals that have happened. I mean, I'm sure they're happening here also, where somebody would, for the sake of getting his bonus at the end of the year, will create fictitious invoices.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Now, is that providing value to the customer? No. It is your valuation and your bonus you are worried about. There are umpteen number of examples. And it's after a few years, the damn thing comes out.
That's true. And you can see that reflection. I mean, I was reading somewhere just a day or two before that in every decade, if I'm correct, the Fortune 500 loses 30% of the companies. They just vanish. And of course, there are multiple reasons, but this is one that you are so short-term oriented that you
lose the long-term side.
Correct. So sticking to execution, what characteristics do you see in founders who are executing well vis-a-vis those who are not executing well? Do you see any fundamental difference in them?
See, I would restrict myself to the micro and the small business.
Sure.
Yes, the founders who stick to it and we have done the analysis on the mortality rate of some of the businesses. So when you say mortality is not, may not be necessarily that the business has collapsed. Somebody has closed the business because he got another opportunity to start a career, which is fine. You know, maybe he thought that I could become an entrepreneur, but he didn't have the withstanding qualities what is required to execute consistently. For example, discipline is the most important thing. The myth that is floating around that I am my own boss is a lot of crap. Sorry for the because you have so many bosses. All your customers are your bosses. You're not working. I'm in control of my time. No, you're not in control of your time. You have to be 24/7. You might delegate it, still you're responsible.
True.
Now, those who cannot withstand this heat have to get out of the kitchen. So some of them do that. Others, maybe the idea was not well researched, so they fail. But the most important thing I've talked about, if you have to be consistent in business success, discipline, you must have your rules that you follow. When you make a commitment, see, quality is not only about the product specification and its performance. Commitment, quality is about your commitment. Commitment to your delivery is also a quality aspect.
Of course.
Commitment to keeping your word. It may not be written down. Moment you become legalese in dealing with the customer, you have lost the game.
Yeah.
It's the good old system of Indian way of, you know, zaban de diya hai to kar denge. That, if you're lacking, then your reputation, because ultimately it is the word of mouth that stays longest.
Yes.
You may have a big ad, some Khan or some Kumar will come and talk about your product, though he doesn't use the product. And people are seeing through all this.
Yes.
And there are now enough influencers, bad or good.
Absolutely.
That so people have stopped believing this mass media.
True.
They go to word of mouth. And word of mouth comes from your existing customer. So if you don't keep your customer satisfied, that's what I'm saying. Success has two C's, cash and customer. The moment you lose your customer satisfaction or customer's trust, you're down a slope.
Right.
And that's why I say, to me, the best definition of quality that I've seen is when the product doesn't come back, but the customer keeps coming back.
Absolutely. That's fantastic. So I will circle back to the beginning of the book and ask you about how is an advisor different from a mentor, and why is mentoring such a critical component of your entire book and the proposition that you have?
In fact, when I do this session on mentoring, I first give some examples and ask them to identify who's what. Okay. And there are three categories of people: consultant, coach, and a mentor. Okay. Coach is somebody who's focused on a limited task to make you win a game, make you win a tournament. Okay. He's not interested in your overall performance. So coach is limited. What is a consultant? I mean, I could tell you many jokes about consultants, but that is not the time for it. But consultant is the one who provides a solution to a problem. Okay? I mean, that is the... And the relationship is very formal. He's not bothered about other things. He will say, okay, there is a problem in the air conditioning system. The consultant will come look at it and provide a solution and get on. But a mentor is somebody who is interested in you, interested in building your capacity, not trying to give a solution to a problem. The owl didn't give the capacity to the mouse to become a cat.
Right.
He only told him, you become a cat.
Cat.
So the mentor is, in fact, you know, the origin of the word mentor is the person who helped in the Odysseus, Homer's son, guiding him. But This mentorship in India goes back to the Vedic times. What is our Gurukula system? The people used to go to the Guru, not just to learn one subject, but be there and understand life and be a useful citizen. Similarly, there is this other thing that people talk about, the Socratic method of learning, by asking questions. Even much before Socrates, we had that system in India, Upanishadic way of learning. The teacher, the guru, and the shishya would involve themselves in a samvad and try to understand. And mentoring is basically the same. Asking questions, prompting the person to think of an answer and correct it by logic, not by authority.
Right.
So mentoring is uniquely different from any one of these two other categories, the advisor or a consultant or a coach. In fact, there have been many versions of mentoring I have seen in India. Somebody even offers his mentoring help on a bid. Whatever money is paid is going to a particular NGO, so I will mentor the person. And you know what that mentoring used to be? Be with him for one full day carrying his briefcase. That is not mentoring. I'm sure you're aware of these things happening.
Absolutely.
So to us, mentoring means I'm in touch with you. I'm helping you right through the process, but I'm not solving it for you. I will make you solve it. I will guide you. And when you're not on track, I will try to correct you. So in our mentoring, for the entrepreneurship, we have the awareness creation, which is a very short duration, just to people be aware of it. Then we have the 5-day workshop where we teach them some fundamentals and the basics. And then there is the mentoring, which is one-on-one based on the business idea this person has. Now, what is the people have asked me? What is the duration of this mentoring? It could vary anywhere from 3 months to 18 months because that is the kind of time the person takes. And even beyond mentoring, we go to what we call as the handholding. Even when the person has started a business, we try to be in touch with them. Whenever they have an issue, they will call us and try to get some idea as to how to go about it. But only yesterday I was talking to somebody who started a business, running it, had some issue. So we got on a call and started discussing what could be done. So mentoring is a continuous process. And the one which tries to build the capacity of the person who's the protege.
Right. And it sounds to me very non-hierarchical in terms of the relationship.
Yes.
And be very Alderian in terms of structure. I mean, that's what it was coming to my mind. I think that this is a very, as I said, dense book, but I think anybody who goes through the, 250 odd pages that is there, will make it, will have a much better chance of actually succeeding than otherwise.
In fact, when I was putting the title of the book, somebody suggested, rather than saying that, how to
minimize business
failure, they say, how to avoid. Now, avoidance will not come from the book.
Right.
It all depends on the individual and the variable. But all that we can do is to help you minimize.
Yes.
In fact, there is ingrained in our mantra, I hope. In fact, when you remove it from the acronym and say, I hope, what exactly do you say when you say, I hope? I hope I will be right. I hope I have looked at all the possible risk factors and I've tried to address them for mitigation.
Yes.
I hope I'll succeed because there is always the chance element which is not under your control.
Yes.
You only minimize the possibility of failure. You do not eliminate it. Anybody who promises will be doing the wrong thing to the people.
Bits About Books is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers through its presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos, and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 99021-631-32.
Sir, thank you so much for this session. I really enjoyed talking about it. I hope you had a good time. But if you think there is something you want to add, please feel free.
The only thing I wanted to say is about the book. We are not putting it into the market in terms of a hard copy, but it will be getting on the Kindle in the month of April. So it's available for those who want to go through it.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes with great conversations on breakthrough books. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today on Bits About Books, where we talk to authors about breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and buy the book to learn firsthand and implement some of the great ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of Bits About Books. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it.
This BizCast original podcast is produced for PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where the mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Subhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.